You have the pleasant attitude of having me for a teacher this morning. And I hadn't taught a class for several years. And when my son asked me to teach a class, I started thinking. I could say no very easily. And a lot of us that are older, we say no too many times. And the subject he gave to me to do is, which I'll be talking about, is a Christian and his influence in the home. It's very important, so I figured that maybe, as old as I am, and there's not very many here audience that is any older than I am, and if there's are, I'm not going to mention them, because I might embarrass somebody. But teaching is a wonderful thing, and the knowledge you have. I read a book several years ago, written by a member of the church, Worthington, and the title of the book was 45 and Satisfied. It is written predominantly for men. A man goes through a change of life, more or less, different than a woman, but he goes through a change of life. When he hits that 45 years or 50 years, they figure he's lost his youth. Things that are happening now, he's missed it. So he goes out wondering. But that's not what I'm talking about. I read the book, and one part of it I really like. Worthing said, when we get older, we say we're getting forgetful. And believe it, brothers and sisters, that's not the case. We're not getting forgetful. Now you take, there's some couple of young people here. You know, when they're 20 years of age, they only got 20 years of knowledge up here. When you're 40 years of age, you got 40 years of knowledge up there. And when you're 60, you got 60 years of knowledge up there. And when you're 80, you got 80 years. It's not that you're forgetting forgetful. It's there in your brain, but they got to locate it. There's so much data stored up there that it takes a while to find it. So we're not getting forgetful. It's just that we got so much knowledge, has to check. An example he gave is this. Have you ever tried to think of somebody's name you couldn't think of it? Just rack your brain. Maybe that afternoon or that night you're doing something else and all of a sudden it pops into your head. Your computer's working up there. Nell sometimes looked at me and I'm staring ahead and she said, honey, what you thinking about? I said, I don't know, my computer's looping. So that is true, but influence. When I have a lesson plan and it's very lengthy, so I have just picked out some important parts, and I picked out some scripture. The scriptures are more or less from Proverbs, but there's others. And I thought about influence. Have you ever, in reading the Bible, have you ever had a character come up that you think about that might be influence for you? And when I was preparing for this lesson, the one that popped in my mind is a man at 110 years of age. He relinquished control. The man was in Egypt. He left with the children of Israel. He was in 40 years of wilderness. And when Moses got to the point that he couldn't go any further, he appointed him the leader. His name was Joshua. Joshua is the influence he must have had upon the people. He had influence with God because God chose him to take over the reins after Moses didn't. So Joshua has gone and led the people into the promised land for 15 years. And they captured the promised land from the Amorites, the Hittites, and all of them. Well, he was relinquishing control as their leader. He called all the Israelites together. He called the prophets, the judges, the elders, the leaders. And he gave a dissertation in Joshua 24. And in that dissertation, he gave them a synopsis of what has happened to the children of Israel. From the time they left Egypt until they got in the promised land that God gave to them. And he renewed all this information to the people. And He said, you live in homes which you did not build. You live in cities you did not build. You eat off the fruit of the land that you did not plant. God has given it to you. And he made a statement in that closing statement that the gods from the different lands and everything, and these people, what they have received from God. And when he got finished with it, he made one statement. And it's a fantastic statement. We all should think about it and be an influence that he was to the people. In Joshua 24:15, and if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose you for this day which you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served and were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites whose land you dwell. But as far as me and my house, we will serve the Lord. As husbands and wives, the lesson is broken down to three categories. One is husbands and wives. The other one is the husband and the wife and children. And the last one hits a lot of us, and that's the age, those that are older. I think of a story I heard one time growing up. My grandmother, Grandmother Ingram, she died at 99. She was about 15 younger than my grandfather, whom I never saw. He died in 1922. But I used to sit at his feet and listen. The Ingrams at this particular time were hard-shell Baptists. They came out of Georgia. And she told stories as far as the Civil War, told stories as far as growing up. Now, she's about 5'1". My granddaddy was 6'4" and weighed 240 pounds. It reminds me of Johnny Boy and Betty Davis, you know. But I talk about, and she was talking about Marion William. His name was William Ingram. And she said, after the wedding, that night, as we went in the room, she said he took his trousers off. You remember the old beds that had the bedpost on the end? Some of us that are older can remember that. He took his breeches and hung it on that bedpost. He said, now, Nettie, if we don't get up in the morning, whoever put on those breeches is going to run this house. And she called me Billy, said, Billy. And she told me how big my granddaddy was. She said, I could fit in just one leg of those breeches. She said, so I didn't put them on the next morning. It's, we, some of us that was raised several years ago, we were raised to the point as far as commitment. I don't know how many was at a wedding yesterday, but at the wedding yesterday, some words were spoken that brought back memories. Now, maybe you all remember, 5 years ago, there was five couples in this congregation who celebrated 50 years of marriage. Janet Hickerson, her husband has passed away. Charles Fifield, his wife has passed away. But the Hollands and Bonnie and Arthur Art, Arthur and Bonnie, 50 years, and Nell and I for 50 years. And I thought about it, and in our time and age, when you made a commitment, said, I do, that I do was for better, for worse. And I know I may be stepping on some toes, and I'm sorry, I'm going to just say that the commitments that the young people today are making, they're not making the commitment that it should be made. Is marriage a bed of roses for 50 years? No. The Bible said, does not say that you don't have problems in a married life. And we use the phrase sometimes that when people, divorce wasn't even our category, wasn't even our word. My mother and dad, they emphasized that to me. I was lucky. I was raised in a Christian home with a Christian mother and a Christian father. There's others in here that I noticed they did too. So we would emphasize to us as far as the commitment for husband and wife. When you said, I do, that was it, for better or for worse, for health or otherwise. So it's something that young people that we need to teach them today, the commitment is a commitment. And if y'all will excuse me, it's hard up with that spotlight. Think of some of the things as far as husband and wife. Some people don't know it. Nell and I have been married for 50 years. You know how long we've been in business together? We have our own business, and we're partners. And we've been married 55 years now, but 45 years we've been business partners. And people couldn't understand how in the world can you be in business with your wife? To me, it's almost like a marriage. To say that we don't have disagreements, no, I can't say that. I'd be lying. We have arguments, yes. I've always said, Nell and I, we've been good business partners in that I'll take the gray area and she won't take the gray area in some issues. But we get along fine, but the thing about it is, it's give and take. I told you a story about my grandmother and everything, but I'll tell you a story about Nell and I. When we got married, I said, honey, I'm going to make all the major decisions in this family, and you can make all the minors. She said, okay. I've been married 55 years. I hadn't made a major decision yet. But it's to the issue of the thing that we have never gone to bed with an ill manner. And for husbands and wives, if you want to be an influence upon your family, this is what kids see. Kids see what takes place in a home. And you have got to be an influence on them. I think of another story. You know, I went back to college with a wife and three kids through Nell's encouraging. And I had a teacher there. Maybe some of you remember. His name was Baxel B. Baxter. He's BBB. I tell you, my tongue get tied up sometime. But Brother Baxter was a minister, evangelist, a teacher, an excellent teacher. And friendly, outgoing. And he told a story in his class to this extent. He said, I just got through preaching. He preached at one of the largest congregations in Nashville. And he said, I went and sat on the front pew like I usually do. I put my arm like over here on the back of it. And there was two little boys on that front pew too. He said, when I sat down, they scooted over till they was underneath my arm. And I looked at him and smiled. He said, I felt a tug on my coat. And I looked down, see what he wanted to say. He said, I want to be just like you. Influence. We don't know sometimes who we are influenced. But in our walk of life from day to day, we're going to influence somebody if they see us. And I'm not talking about going around with your shirt on backwards to show that you're religious along the line, but there's so many ways. They always said a picture is worth a thousand words. So as parents and within your home, you influence your kids, your children. So the love that you show between each other, as I said, I took some verses out of Proverbs. And, the first one I got in 1 Corinthians, you all know this, in 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in an inquiry, but rejoices in the truth. Bear all things, believe all things, hope all things, endure all things. Love never fail, but whether there are prophecies, they will fail. But whether there are tongues, they will cease. Where there is knowledge, it would vanish away. 13, talk about love. A husband and wife should love each other to the point that they should talk. If they got a disagreement, talk. My daddy told me one thing, and growing up, my dad never was not alive when I got married. He died in 1951. Nell and I got married in 53. That we walked and talked because I was a baby of the family of three boys. And I got some advice from my dad before he passed away. We talked. And this is a point I'm going to cover in here about fathers and mothers as far as your children are concerned. But one thing he's mentioned to me that has always stuck with me, and a lot of times when I attend a wedding and I say something to the couples, he's always reminded me. He said, Bill, not Bill, he called me Billy. He said, Billy, it takes two to make an argument. Think about it. It does take two to make an argument. And he said, when you start arguing, sometimes what you amounts to, you may say something you didn't mean, so someone's hurt. But if you hadn't started that argument, you wouldn't have said it. And it's just like the old adage, you know, I always thought when you see a trial and someone's objected to something, the judge told the jury, just disregard what you heard. How can you wipe it off your brain? So the same thing goes with you and your wife. You say something, and you're sorry you said it. And that's something else, too. There's two statements that's very hard for men, especially. And I think if I point my finger at you, there's three of them here pointing back at me. How many times do we take it upon ourselves, I'm sorry? We're too proud to say it? There's something Nell and I do every night. I love you. Just three words. That's all it takes. I love you. So you go to bed at night with your head on the pillow. Things are solved. You told her. Husbands and wives, don't be too proud not to say it. How many times a day should you say it? I lost count a lot of times. I think I've done something wrong, so I say it all day long. But I'm a man, so you have to forgive me. But is this something to the point that base your marriage on love and understanding? There's always circumstances where something happens. And the thing about it is, we got a forgiving God. And he would forgive us if we ask him to. Also in Matthew 7:12, I think you know what that is. That's the golden rule. Therefore, all things whatsoever that men should do to you, do ye also to them. For this is the law and prophecy. Husband and wife, remember that. If you want to be treated nice, treat him nice. Husband, the same thing go for you. And going down to Proverbs, by not quarreling, is a heading here. And I picked out, it has several verses there in Proverbs. I don't know how long it's been since you read the book of Proverbs, but you know, Solomon wrote that book. And Solomon ought to know, because how many wives did he have? So he had to learn something as far as that's concerned. So in Proverbs 16:24, pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. What he was saying, that we should love each other, sweet each other, because if you want it back, you're going to have to give it yourself. Someone's got to make the first step. And that's where a lot of times when men fall short, they're too proud to take that first step. But they should. In Colossians 3:10, and have put on the new man who is renewed to knowledge according to the image of him who created him. Proverbs 5:18. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. Proverbs 18:22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtain from favor from the Lord. Again, as I said, I was blessed in growing up in a Christian home with a mother and father. And then my dad was a Baptist, Hartshell Baptist to begin with. My mother came from a family that's, I was trying to think about it. I'm thinking back to her dad was my granddad. He was a walking Bible. He could quote the Bible. You ask him to give him a verse, you give him a verse, he could quote it for you. And his father before him, and he was raised in the Reformation movement to a certain extent in South Alabama. But I walked with him and talked to him, and he talked to me. But mother and dad emphasized to me to this point that marry a Christian woman. So you have some, marriage is not easy, any way you look at it. And that's one blow right there if you do not have for what you believe. But I have seen where those that, I can state one right now. Y'all know my sister-in-law, Iris Massey. She married Tom Massey, God rest his soul. Tom was a good man, but he was not a member of the church. But Iris went to church every time the door would open, and Tom was left home. They had two boys. She took the boys and went to church. It got to the point that Tom was converted and baptized. And what I'm saying is there are some good choices, and there's availability that things will change if you proceed to be what you're supposed to be. That's all I got to say about husbands and wives. I could say a lot more, but as I said, I got so much material here. It takes, really and truly, I should take about 3 weeks to just talk about it. But it's about like whenever they ask you to give a 5-minute lesson, sermon on Wednesday night. No way in the world can I give a 5-minute lesson. So I renege when they ask me to do one. But there's so much in the Bible. God created man and woman. And he created the home. And just like in that ceremony yesterday, there's a wedding here yesterday, Beth Pittman and Harold Rosenboom, I think it is. And David made a statement when you think about it. God created woman. He didn't take a bone out of the foot. He didn't take a bone out of it. He took the rib, which was right next to, which says that she is equal. Yes, she is an equal, and she has to be treated as one. Yes, God's command that man is the head of the house, but you don't have to lord it over the woman. So, in closing that area as far as husband and wives, there are a lot of scriptures in alone just concerning that. I want to hit on the point, the influence of parents in the lives of their children. I read something here, between birth and the age of 21 years, the average child would spend 105,000 hours awake. Of those waking hours, he would spend a maximum of 2,100 hours in Bible school and worship. And 10,000 hours would be spent in secular school. That left 92,000 hours. And this will be spent at home. The greatest single influence you have on your children is those 92,000 hours. I tell a story once in a while. I think some of us that are had children and have grandchildren, I say sometimes, you know, when I was 21 years of age, when I was 16 years of age, I thought my parents were dumb. Now that I'm 21, it's surprising how much they've learned in 5 years. Who learns what in 5 years? But in that 5 years, I think about the children of Israel. The children, they had families when they were 40 years in the wilderness. And they knew, some of them knew, that they will not reach the promised land. I wonder what they taught their kids. Have you thought about that? For 40 years, they died off, but the children didn't. Anyone that was under 20 was able to enter the promised land. But 40 years, some was born. I wonder what they taught their kids that 40 years. Maybe one of the days, if I'm lucky enough and good enough, maybe when I get to heaven, I'll find out. And I got a bunch of notes I'm going to ask people when I get up there. But it's to the point that you have them. And mothers and fathers, you are a big influence on them the way you live and what you do. As I said at the beginning, a picture is worth a thousand words. You can talk and you can talk. And you have kids. It goes in one ear and out the other. Sometimes you wonder, I guess there's no gray matter up there. Just. But if you act, if you walk the walk and talk the talk, they will see it. Ezekiel 16, indeed, everyone who quotes Proverbs will use the proverb against you, like mother, like daughter. Have you heard that? I have. Not that, except it's not mother like daughter. It's like father like son. And I'm proud. I look at my son. I look at my daughter. I'm proud. And somewhere along the line, I've done something right. So the thing about it is, they see you, what you do. And it, those little brains grab a lot. So you got to be that influence, that one that stands up and to be recognized. Because again, the kids will see it. In Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9, I got this scripture in several areas here. Parents are instructed to properly influence the children. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children and shall talk to them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, while you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Looking around the audience here, I see some that have known me for quite a while and they've known my family. And I guess I'm talking about them because I know what Nell and I did. So I'm using it for an example. We lived down on Tropical Drive in Lake Worth. And some people couldn't understand why we drove so far to church. That's when the church was on North Olive. And you got three kids, ages, there's 2 years in between each one of mine. And so what do we do to keep them quiet? This is an example. We sing a song, this little light of mine, Jesus loves me. Well, we done that and we had Bible quizzes. That's what we did. It was a 30 to 45 minute ride from where we lived to church with the children. And something I enjoy more than anything, I worked hard like a lot of y'all do, but some weekends, I think I bought a 3/4-ton truck and a camper to fit on the back of it. And that was my getaway vehicle. There's a lot of weekends we got off. I got off, and so did Nell. So we got in that pickup truck with that camper, and off we go for the weekend. Where did we go? Went up here to Jensen Beach, went to Jonathan Park, and we camped out. And we had Bible study every night. We were out. And on Sunday morning, we went to church. Some places we've gone, we couldn't go to church. We had church service in our trailer, in our camper. But this is what I would call growing up time or good times. And I remember it today, and I think you asked any of my kids, they do too. It was getting together and doing as they said here in Deuteronomy. You take all your spare time, all your time, and take it with your children. And teach them. And hope that some of it stays up there. Because you want them to learn. You want them to know. So I think something Bill Hatcher said one time in his lesson. Some of you remember Bill Hatcher. Bill Hatcher was talking about learning something. He said, the only way you're going to learn is this, repetition, repetition, repetition. Otherwise, you don't just say, it's something I time I see that I see mothers correct a child for doing something wrong. I thought it was great. The child does it again, then she didn't say a thing. Where's that repetition, repetition, repetition? They're not going to learn one time. They're going to try you. And in this area here, too, a woman who had a child, and she went to, I think it was 6 years old. A mother once asked a child psychologist when she was started training her children. She asked how old the child was. He was told he was 5 years old. And he's told her, hurry home, you have already lost 5 best years of the child's life. So if you kind of want to wait a little bit longer to train them, the psychologist said you lost it already. And you that have had babies, had children, and us that have grandchildren can see it, that at a young age, and I'm so proud that we had these nurseries in the back for the young people, for the young children. I hope they get the same training at home as they get here. They learn and they know, because they started storing up that knowledge right up here. How far back can you remember? Think about it. How far back can you remember? I can remember back to where I'm about 4 years old and things that took place. And one of the things I remember at 4 years old, we lived on 34th Street in Northwood. And I knew we had a big German shepherd dog. And that dog wouldn't let me go near the street. He blocked me off. I remember going to church down on Constant Road. I remember my teacher. I remember when we moved from West Palm Beach to Fort Pierce. I was 4 years old. And I'm sure somewhere before I was four, things I've learned, and I guess you put me up underneath hypnosis, you can find it. But I can't find it just thinking about it. But the thing it is that start them out young and train them. And don't lose that 5 years in between. That they're smart, they could be smarter, and they behave. Some of you don't remember a member we had, his name was Von Seal Kern. When we were on North Olive, if any of my kids misbehave and they go in quiet, I'll pick them up, I take them outside, and you can hear one of them saying, "I'll be good, Daddy, I'll be good." I take them outside and spank them. And if they didn't stop crying, I spank them again. I bring them back into the audience and make them sit down and behave. Fonzie jumped all over me one day. "Why you do that? That's a good child." She didn't have any children. I wish sometimes she did and she'll learn some things. Because I learned a lot from my kids. There's Debbie over there. She was born while I was overseas. I missed out on some of her growing up. Her granny and mother spoiled her rotten. But she was almost 10 months old before I saw her. So I lost 10 months there. So the idea, fathers and mothers, train your child up in the way to go, and when they get older, they will not depart. That's in the Bible. That's not my quote. Train your children. It's against an influence, and I said it's an area where we can influence them because we influence them a lot of times. Let's take, for example, another area they got down here as far as where is it at? One thing that's told me here, when a Jew was asked, "What manner of child shall he this be?" He will be a Jew 99 times out of 100. That's not to take anything away being discriminated, but the Jewish children are taught to the deal. 99 times out of 100, he will say he's a Jew. And I have talked to Catholics, and they advocate the point, give me a child. Once she's a Catholic, he'll always be a Catholic. And the same thing goes 99 times out of it, they will be, because they are trained from childhood. Sometimes we as parents, and I said we, somewhere along the line, we forget to do something that we should do in training our children. We lost one adage. I said a minute ago, my grandfather on my mother's side could quote the Bible. And back in that time and era, the Christians were noted for being walking Bibles because they'd learn. And how did they learn? By studying the Bible and reading it. I'm not going to have to ask a show of hands, but how many of y'all read or study the Bible daily? I didn't ask for hands, Madeline. I don't want to make some feel bad, but again, I remember him reading the Bible. They had a place in Alabama, South Alabama, called New Damascus, not far out of Elba. It was a house, and Mother and I go up there sometimes in the summertime for a week or two. They didn't have electricity. They have an oil lantern. And I can see my granddaddy sitting at a table reading his Bible. I'm more modern. I work on a computer. And sometimes I get tired of doing what I'm doing. I got two Bible programs on my computer. And what I do is I turn it for my work and I open the Bible up on my computer and I read and study. One of the programs I got gives concordance and areas to go to explain what I just read. But I tell you, someone that fascinates me to no end. And this not selling Dan short or anything, but David Sproul, you know, he studied and reads the Bible every day. And his memory is fantastic. And I use the excuse, well, my brain is so loaded right now, I ain't got room to anything else. And there I go, I talk too long. And I miss the area there that really hits some most of us. Let me jump over there real quick and give it a hit, lick and a miss. And that is the agent can have a fine influence on the home. us that are grandparents. I have 8 grandkids, and I love them all. Every other week, on Tuesday night, I invite, really and truly, I started this because I had my grandkids around, Trey and Nay and some of the, Taylor. They would come over to the house every other Tuesday night, and I would fix supper for them. And then we have a Bible study, and then we would play games. All my grandkids are gone, so I have adopted son. Bethany and Julie, Leslie, they come over the house every other Tuesday. Cam Cox come over. And there have been others that have been invited to come over there. But what I'm saying is, we that are older, don't use this excuse, we're too old. We can be a terrific influence on the younger generation. And that's our problem right now. We came along in a generation that commitments were important to us, was a necessity to us. Generations that come along right now, they're not taught that you make a commitment. It's just like I made a commitment to God when I was baptized. That's fine, but there's other commitments too, which the Bible commands. Train your child up in the Lord, and when they're older, they will not depart. I've seen examples of this, and I'm not going to call her names, but I know one that's in the audience today. She was taught, I knew her mother and father, and she was taught. Matter of fact, I talked to her too at a young age. They came back. They may wander away, but if you teach them and instill in them what their responsibility to God is, they will come around and come back to the Lord. But we that are older, we have got to instill into our grandkids, our children, our grandkids, that to be committed to God is a 24/7, or was it 7/24? It's not something you put your coat on Sunday morning, you come to services, and that's it. No, living a Christian life is a 7/24. The influence that you can have is tremendous by the way you live and by what you do. It's just like when my son asked me to teach a class. It had been very easy for me to say no because I hadn't taught for several years. But I figured maybe some of the knowledge that I got, I'm older. As I said, I don't think there's very many here that's older than me. But it's to the point that we can be such an example to the younger generation. They see that we're committed. Maybe they will be committed also. So do it. Grandparents, take an interest in your grandchildren. Teach them. As I said earlier, I remember my granddaddy on my mother's side. He was a walking Bible, and we go up to visit him in Alabama. The church was about 3 miles from where he lived. He said, Billy, it's time to go. Church started at 10 o'clock, and he's saying it's time to go 9:15. I could do 3 miles in less time than that. But as we walk along to the church building, it's an old wooden church. The windows are shutters, you raise them up, and that's air conditioned now. Old wooden benches. He led singing. He knew shape music. And he preached, and he taught a class. And because he was qualified, he was an example to me as to what a person can do in an older age. And we're all that way. So don't use this excuse that I'm too old. Grandparents, take an active part. Thank you for your attention.